Are you hesitating to take the next step in your e-commerce journey? FounderPlus has you covered. With proven frameworks tailored to your business needs for fast results, a supportive community of over 30,000 like-minded entrepreneurs, and weekly live mentorship sessions, FounderPlus is your key to success. Try FounderPlus today for just $1 for 7 days and start building your dream business with confidence. You can visit founder.com/start-trial or click the link in the description to claim your trial.
This is episode number 4 of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now, the Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Ariana Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to let you know that our goal at Founder is to help entrepreneurs succeed however we can by giving away high quality content in the form of interviews, blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, you name it. We put out so much content to help you. And another interesting project that we're working on right now is partnering with world-class founders like Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills like negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free trainings with founders like this, which is 100% free, just go to founder.com/free. Okay, so now let's talk about today's episode.
Hello and welcome to the Founder Podcast. It's great to have you. I hope you're enjoying the episodes. I'm really, really excited to bring them to you all. Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your earbuds with me and taking the time to listen. As always, we've got another rocking interview for you. Today it is with Kamal Ravikant. Kamal is a best-selling author, tech entrepreneur, and investor. He's quite well known out of Silicon Valley. We talk about what it takes to have a winning pitch when you're asking and pitching for money. This is a really all around about, you know, we cover all sorts of topics in this interview, and it was a really, really cool conversation. Kamal actually hit rock bottom at one stage. He was bedridden, he was extremely depressed, and he somehow turned his whole life around. And he talks about that whole process that he went through and how he wrote 2 best-selling books. Yeah, he really goes into how he sprung back and what it takes to build a successful business. Kamal is a very deep and spiritual person, very, very interesting guy. And it's not something you would expect from a big guy out of tech from Silicon Valley. But he's extremely wise and has invested in himself so much and has built some massive companies and shares a ton of gold with you today. Especially around investing, building a successful company, and how loving yourself saved his life. So that's it from me, and let's jump into this interview. The musings of Kamal Ravikant. Enjoy. Today I'm speaking to Kamal Ravikant. Kamal is a tech entrepreneur, investor, and author of the best-selling books Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It and Live Your Truth. Kamal, I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me and being so patient actually in tracking me down.
It's all good. It's what I do. Sometimes I've sent people 7, 8 emails, all different forms of contact to get in touch with them. And, you know, persistence pays off.
I think if you just make that your motto, you've nailed it. And most things, really, right?
Yeah. You know, that's that to me, like, I actually did a talk about a month or so ago, and I said that one of the common denominators from, you know, the 100+ entrepreneurs that I've had the privilege to speak to, and it's persistence. They just don't give up. They just don't let it go. They keep trying, and they make it work, and they just want it bad enough.
Yeah, it's, I mean, persistence, or if you want to call it focus. You know, I sometimes wonder about some of the choices I've made where I was so persistent and I went after things and they didn't work out, and I kept beyond it and kept beyond it, where I sometimes maybe it would have been better to let go, like you're a dog just hanging on to a bone and it's time to let go of the bone. So I've been trying to learn that lesson as well. Or sometimes it's like there's persistence, right? But there's also being open. You know, one of the best things I've learned in like the investing I do now is I try not to have an ego and just be open, you know, learn from like better investors than me. And so no matter how much I may be in love with some company, if they don't care for it, they have better track records, I'll let it go. And I'd rather be proven wrong and you know, by the right people. That's been a very good lesson, actually, because it is a natural inclination when you're building anything, you just stick with it. And that is when the great things happen. That's when, but sometimes there is a time when you have, I think if the words would be persistence and maybe staying open or surrender to how things are. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
All right. Let me think about it. I'll give you a particular example that I was just thinking about recently. So when I was building my last company, I remember at one point I was negotiating with this person who became one of our main partners, and I ended up basically betting the company on our relationship with this partner. And when that person pulled out, it basically, you know, catered the company. Now, when I was negotiating with this person originally, I came from a place of lack. And you know, like in a negotiation, the person who actually is willing to walk away is the one who wins the negotiation, always. The one who wants it the least wins, right?
Mm.
And so the negotiation I did was a poor negotiation where I gave up too much to this person. You know, that's how I started the relationship, by letting him know that you're too important and I will just cater to your every need. Where if I've come from a place of, listen, I'm creating something valuable and I'm offering this to you, I want you to be a part of it, but I'm not going to let you take advantage of me or take advantage of it, I think things would have been very different. And if that person had walked away, I think the company wouldn't have worked out very early on, and I may have decided to shut it down back then and save myself a whole bunch of trouble when the person did walk away 2 years later, you know. So I think in that case I should have been open to the partners I was dealing with and where they were coming from, you know. And they were coming from a place of they would wanted to grab as much as they can, right? Which never makes a good partner, right?
Yeah.
So in that negotiation I should have realized that I should have stayed firm to, listen, this is what I'm willing to give for the health of the company. And this is what I'm, you know, and this is fair and reasonable. Anything beyond that, let's walk away. And I really, looking back, that would have actually led to a better outcome. Even if things didn't work out, they wouldn't have worked out fast, right? And it would have been done. Rather than I came from a place of basically lack and weakness, and I gave up too much in the beginning, and that set the tone of the relationship. Those business relationships never work.
Yeah, no, you know, I understand now. I see.
So that's something I've been thinking about recently, actually, just a few days ago. So since we're talking, I'm throwing it out there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, yeah, Seth Godin wrote this fascinating book called The Dip. It's tried to teach you when to quit.
Oh, interesting. And I'll have to check it out.
So he tries to help you and work out when to quit. And it says about how quitting is actually underrated. And most people quit in a lot of things. It's just, you just don't realize it. So, yeah, no, it's a really interesting little book.
I'll check it out. Yeah, it's a matter of, I think sometimes letting go, our ego gets so attached to what we're doing that it becomes our, you know, becomes who we are, and then we're afraid to let it go because then what does that say about us, right? So there's a balance there, and I'm still working on figuring out that balance. And I think in the end, the balance comes from, it happens more naturally when you come from a place of like, I'm on purpose, this is what I'm doing, and if it's, you know, and I will only work with people who are willing to be fair and equitable, versus coming from a place of lack, like, please, I need to work with you and I'll do whatever it takes, right?
I agree. So let's rewind things. I'd like to talk to you about redefining success and what it means for you and your journey, but let's go back and find out where you started as an entrepreneur, and can you give us a roundabout short insight into your journey?
Sure. I mean, I never set out to be an entrepreneur. You know, like there's some people who are like natural entrepreneurs since they were little kids. I don't think I was one of them.
Yeah.
What I did was I moved out here to Silicon Valley during the first dot-com boom. like this is even pre-Google and all of that, right? And help build some very interesting things here. And what that taught me was the power of just we were creating the internet, right? That this all the stuff we were creating had never existed before. And at that time, you could just jump into something and do it. And I joined this company called Halfion, which became WebMD. And I built some very interesting stuff there. And at the whole time, it was just like, give Kamal whatever, and he will get it done. Because I was so excited, I just wanted to do everything. Mm. And it showed me just the power of just like being in this industry where you are creating something new, something that didn't exist before. And there was something, and millions of people get to use it. You know, there's something very beautiful about that. And so I've stayed here since. And you know, the best in the world come here. It's like you never get stale because you're surrounded by new blood that comes in all the time. And you know, some of the smartest people, just when you think you're smart enough, you meet some, you know, someone will come in and just blow you out of the water. Mm. It's great. And you know, what I've done, and I think this is like a great hack, or maybe this is the answer, is to surround yourself with entrepreneurs. You know, this whole area is full of nothing but entrepreneurs. So like, you can't help but become one. You know, like everyone, like they say in Hollywood, everyone's got a script, every waiter's got a like a screenplay, mm. you know, in his back pocket. Here, everyone's got a startup or an app. And really, like I'm like my doctor from a couple of years ago, you know, started a company and a startup. And like, you can't help it because everyone around you is doing it. And you just get to start to see them. And you just think, well, if they can do it, you know, because I think a lot of entrepreneurship is we don't think enough of ourselves or we don't think we know enough. But once you start surrounding yourself with people who are just doing it, you realize, well, maybe I can. And it just rubs off on you. I mean, literally everyone who comes here eventually will have some, will be part of startup or will start one. It's really funny how that works. And so that I think was my real entrepreneurship journey was I was fortunate enough to pick Silicon Valley and be a part of it. Over the years with the last company I built, which was an ad network, I got to meet some very interesting internet marketers, which is a whole different world I didn't know. And I've made friends in that industry, you know, some really good people there. And so I've gotten to see how they're entrepreneurs in a very different way than we are. We build products and companies. When I say products, I mean like Skype. We're using Skype. Skype would be a product. Whereas they build more like information courses, and that's their product. And they, you know, whereas like I would lock myself in my room with Google for a week, and I would be an expert, you know. But they will actually do that. But then they will sell it, right? And it'll be valuable. And so that's shown. That's a whole different kind of entrepreneurs, and some of them are very, very smart people. They're very good at marketing, sharing this information. So I've learned a lot from them. I think the key really is, I think I've talked about this before, if you want to be fit, don't surround yourself with people who are not fit. Don't surround yourself with people who want to be fit. Surround yourself with people who are fit. Guaranteed you will become fit. Guaranteed. Because we're social creatures. We're pack creatures. We rub off on each other. And you want to step up to the people you're surrounded by. It's just a natural social instinct we have. So yeah, that's been my entrepreneurship journey, actually. Just being surrounded by some of the best in the world in Silicon Valley.
Wow. And can you tell us a little bit about some things that you've built, your own companies and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I helped build Halfion, which became WebMD. And I left about, I think, a year or two after I went public. Did some very interesting products there. Then I've done stuff with companies that really haven't gone anywhere. I've advised in companies. I would say the best known one would be WebMD because everyone knows that one. The rest are all small ones. Some fail, some don't. And these days, you know, I don't want to start companies anymore. It's too much work. It's just brutal, too much work. I've done it enough. So that's why I'm doing the investing. I run a small venture fund and I'm just very focused investment fund with, you know, and I advise some companies because I, you know, if you've been doing something for a very long time and you're relatively smart, you know just how to get things done. So I advise companies and I invest in companies.
On the investing piece, what is the one thing you look for when you're speaking to entrepreneurs that are pitching you for money?
Well, it's actually interesting. How I do it is a little bit different than a lot of funds. Like my whole thing is I never want to be the smartest guy at the table. I want to be the dumbest guy at the table. So I go along with like really, really smart investors who have already vetted some companies, you know, investors with amazing track records. And then when I talk to entrepreneurs, you know, I look at them as an entrepreneur. And in the end, you know, what it comes down to is a person. Can they pull this off? You know, there's lots of great ideas out there, right? But in the end, it's one thing we've learned is all execution. No one here funds ideas anymore. You will not get idea funded. unless you're like Elon Musk or something, right? Who has it? Yeah. I mean, really, unless you have that kind of track record, you can't go to investors and say, I have this great idea for an app. I mean, you will just hear the sound of door slamming, right? You have to basically, because now it's so easy to build something and so cheap that you need basically product. You need a product. You need, even if it's a minimal viable product, right? But a basic product. And yeah. You need to show traction in the market that the product is for, that the market does want it, and you have the ability to actually be able to get the market to take it, right? Mm. So those are the things you look for, mainly product traction. Then obviously you look at the size of the market and the current certain things tend to be hot. So you know, like if you get in the top ones in there, they'll probably get sold and make a lot of money. So you look at all those factors. But in the end, it's always a people business. You know, everything is a people business, especially in investing. You're betting on people. You're betting on the founders. There are a few companies here that have succeeded despite themselves, you know, despite the founders, but those are really the exceptions. Most great things become great because of the people who build them.
Hmm. Yeah, look, this is fascinating stuff, because I actually had a friend that went down to Silicon Valley and he tried to get money, obviously, and he didn't get any money down there. And he said that his biggest challenge and struggle that he had was that he wasn't proven. He hadn't built anything before. Like, even right. though he did have, he believed, market validation, you know, people, you know, didn't know anyone. And that's what he said. He said that was his biggest challenge. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there's two things. One is, yeah, if you proven commodity, if you just look at the data, people who have sold a company before are more likely to build one that they can sell again. This is from an investment standpoint. Because building something like that is so hard, it's so much different things happening, that if you've gone through it once, odds are you've learned through your mistakes,
mm.
right? Versus you funding someone who's going to learn through the mistakes with your money, right? Because your job as an investor is to get a return on capital and get a high return on capital, because most startups, like 90-something percent startups, fail.
Yeah,
that's one of the little secrets that most people don't realize. Like, literally 90-something percent of startups fail. You know that as an investor. So, like, you need, like, to have some serious big hits to make money as an investor. So for him, being unproven, it definitely makes sense. But there's something else. If you're unproven, if you're someone from, I don't know, just Timbuktu, whatever, just you just crawled out of a cave, but you build an app and all of a sudden it's getting 1 million downloads a day, you will get people begging you to invest in you.
Mm.
So it's not just market validation. You have to prove that. If you can prove that I've created something special, people will jump on board to help you.
Mm.
So maybe he didn't have that level, or he hadn't shown it in a way that he thought he had. You know, because the people here are very smart, and we've been doing it for a long time. It's almost standardized. You can look at products and figure out what are the challenges going to be and so forth. So, you know, you have to learn to say, like, you know, 100 or 1,000 no's for every yes, because there's so many opportunities to invest in. So there are certain things you learn, and especially when you run a venture fund, because you have LPs, you know, they're investors in my fund. I work for them. So my job is to make them a lot of money, right?
Yeah. What are LPs?
LP is a limited partner, just like an investor invests money in a company, and
yes.
LP invests money in a venture fund.
I see.
So those are the people that basically you work for, right? Mm. Your job is to make them, you know, make them a lot of money on the money they invest in your fund. So you have to basically say no to most things. So with your friend, yes, the fact that he wasn't known definitely doesn't help. But in that case, you know, coming to Silicon Valley as an unknown to raise money, it's not necessarily the best answer. Always raise money in the beginning from your home base, from friends and family. Mm. If you can't show that you're the people who know you are going to invest in you, why would strangers invest in you?
Yeah,
I mean, really, think
point.
About
yeah.
it. I mean, if he showed he was able to scrabble some money together and get a product and get traction and it was growing, and I'll bet you he would get funding.
Mm. Yeah, because then you know, the other side of the table, which is interesting, is I had another friend that went over there, and he said it was crazy how easy it was. Mm-hmm. He said he met somebody at a nightclub, and they were going to give him over 100K or something crazy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, it's actually really frothy boom times. It's amazing the stuff that's getting funded.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to stack the odds in your favor, the best way to do is create something of value, get it out to the market, show consistent traction. That's different than market validation. Market validation is research. You know, that's just part of the homework. That does not get you funding. that should not get you funding unless you are like a proven commodity. You know, the thing is, everybody wants to invest in you, but you already have a measure of success. It's kind of funny how that works, right? Mm. So just stack the odds in your favor and have a little measure of success, and people will want to join.
Yeah, no, you're right. So let's talk about success and, mm-hmm. and redefining it. I'd like to say a quote from your book. We don't stumble accidentally into an amazing life. This is from Live Your Truth, uh-huh. by the way. We don't stumble accidentally into an amazing life. It takes a conscious commitment to figuring out what we stand for, finding our truth. It begins by looking inside ourselves, because when it rises from within, we have no choice but to express it, to live it. That is when the magic happens.
Yeah, that is one of the key things I've learned in life. And I wish I'd learned it earlier. You know, because for the longest time, I thought success was a number. And that's what I worked towards. The problem is, if you work towards a number, you work towards something that you start to lose faith in and you don't believe in anymore, it gets really hard, versus something that's full-on expression of you, something that's come from within you. That you know, it's like when things come from inside of you and you decide who you are, what you stand for, you know, it changes your life. Because if it's comes from inside you, no one can take it away from you, and you can't, you know, BS your way out of it. I'm like the best bullshitter for myself that I know. But if something you've figured out on your own, you can't bullshit it away. You have to live it. And when you're not living it, you know, right? And you let yourself down. And eventually we all want to rise, and we go back to what our truth is. And the funny enough, you know, so here's what I learned. Like, so I've been part of some very interesting companies out here. And then, you know, my last company, when I built and it blew up, I lost everything. You know, I was in serious debt and I was really sick. And I had to, when I got out of it, I had to sit down and re-examine, you know, what that meant. But I thought I had failed, but I wrote that book, The Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It, and purely, it was nothing to try to make any money or anything. It was purely to share what I had figured out that actually saved me, that actually made me come back from rock bottom, physically, emotionally, spiritually, everything, right? And it was purely to share it, and I really thought I was going to be a big laughingstock, because no one wrote about that in the Valley at the time. And here I was, my company had crashed, I had crashed, people, you know, and here I was writing a little book telling about, hey, I had figured out the meaning of life after it, right? I published that book, I self-published it, and I really didn't, you know, I've said this before and I keep it repeating it because it still blows my mind. I really did not expect to sell more than 8 or 10 copies. And I think I was going to buy 8 of them. it was purely to share with my friends, like people I love, that, listen, I figured something very important that I want to share with you. And look, you know, within 5 weeks of of being out and no marketing, it was the number one self-help book on Amazon. It changed my life, seeing what the power of just being your full-on self when you give to the world. You know, I gave a product of value. I put it out there, and the world took it and ran with it. Right?
Yeah.
That little book allowed me to then actually start paying my bills too, so I could actually start working on building a venture fund. Otherwise, I would have had to go work for someone to pay off my bills. Right, and I wouldn't have been able to build a venture fund. That's the gift it gave me. And it came purely from a place of giving something that was purely mine. I mean, that's success. That's something that is like something beautiful to experience when it's yours, when you're giving to the world and the world responds. I think that's the best kind of success you can have. I think those two books are truly like two of the best things I've done in my life. They're truly the best things I've done in my life so far. Because a lot of the things I did before, they were ego-driven. They were trying to, you know, either live up to other people's expectations of me or society expectation or whatever, or trying to, like, you know, trying to make money or trying to create a company so that I would be, like, who knows what people would think of me. Because a lot of entrepreneurs I know, you know, they start off as entrepreneurs because it's from a lack of self-esteem. You almost have, like, a need to prove something, prove yourself worthy, right?
Yeah.
Versus if you come from a place where you're just giving and you are worthy, yeah, and the world responds, that's amazing. That is success. Because if you still have the self-worth issues, no matter how much you make, it'll never be enough, or you'll still have your issues. And ironically, I think things work a lot, at least in my experience, things have worked so much better when I come from just a place of giving than they do where I'm just doing it for myself.
I think even if you use just coming from a place of giving in any product you create or the service you're providing, like how much level of more value would you give instead of how am I going to take money from this person? How can I, you know, find something out that they want.
Yeah, because honestly, you know, like I know how to write. I've worked many years to teach myself to be a really good writer. I could have written many different books that I know would have sold, that I could have done, you know, Google search, keyword searches and so forth, and know like this is the kind of book that will sell, so I would have written that, but never would have put me on the map the way this little book where I just poured my heart out. Yeah, that's such an amazing experience, you know, and it's really been a life-changing experience. Like these kind of things where you're not going for what you think the market wants, you're just going for what you have to say, what you have to give.
What I've also found really interesting is you wrote Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It, and mm-hmm. you said you had a friend that, you know, wanted to try to do what you did with your life and really, I guess, evolve and really accept yourself and love yourself, and it didn't work for that friend. So you realized that it was your truth that you were saying.
Yeah, because the love yourself thing, I mean, the book, you know, I get emails every day from people that's changing their lives, you know, because the practice is very simple. It's exactly distilled down what I did to get out of where I was. And it really works. But for some people, it doesn't. And what I realized was, because if something comes from inside of you, like we mentioned before, then you can't hide from it anymore, which is why actually I wrote the second book, which was more a meditative guide so that by the time you were done, you were convinced from the inside out that your truth had to come out. And whatever that is you have to live it. So whether it was my truth or not, because you can take someone, what someone tells you, and make it your truth, that's fine. But it has to be, if you can make it your own. And I referenced to the samurai book written Miyamoto Musashi called The Book of Five Rings, which is like the ultimate classic in samurai literature. He was the most successful undefeated samurai of all time, and he was self-taught. You know, and the guy survived like 4 major battles and 60 one-on-one battles, you know, where you fight to the death, right? Wow. Self-taught. But at the end of his life, he wrote this book called The Book of Five Rings. And it's actually a great book. And it's about sword fighting, but really it's about the mind. It's about fear. And he always keeps on saying, like, I'm going to paraphrase badly, but like, you got to figure this out yourself. You can't just take what I'm telling you. You got to take it and make it your own. That's how you're going to be a great sword fighter. A great samurai. Same thing in anything. You know, you take it and you make it your own. You add your special twist to it. And then it's yours. I mean, you know, that's when the magic happens.
Can you give us a rundown on what exactly happened to you and what led you to write the first book? Because I think that's an important part of your journey and your story.
Sure. So my last company, I was building it. Basically worked for like, you know, the persistence thing. I worked at, I think it was almost 4 years nonstop. I built that company with my own money, you know, co-founders coming and going, people burning out, just continuing on. So it was doing, then finally it was doing very well. And then the thing blew up. And in the process, I hadn't taken like one weekend off in at least 3 years. I think I finally started to give my team Sundays off, but I never took them, you know, never took a full day off. No, actually, I think I took one weekend in 3 years or 3.5 years. And so, you know, and I was always under stress, always just trying to make the thing work. And then when the thing was falling apart, I just got really, really sick. It turns out I'd been sick for a long time. I just thought it was stress. I hadn't bothered to take care of myself. And then a lot of other things happened at the same time, just all life stuff that just nothing good was happening. My company fell apart. My relationships fell apart. My health fell apart. You know, I was just locked in my bedroom, miserable out of my mind. You know, I was suicidal, the works, you know, if you really want to go into it. My company had become my extension of myself. You know, it was my ego. It was like everyone, like I was going to, you know, make this great company and everyone was going to, I don't know, love me because I'd succeeded so well or whatever. And instead, you know, when I was so locked up in my bedroom, and I think one morning I woke up and I decided I can't do this anymore. I'm going to get out of this or die trying. I just can't live like this. And I sat down and made a vow to myself. And the vow was to love myself. And it's in the book, exactly the whole vow. And I'm a big believer that once you commit in something, you go all in. You figure, you know, you just do. I'm not a guy who used to believe in even the word love. So it kind of surprised me to write a vow to myself to do that. But because I made the vow, I decided to do it. And I worked on many different ways to do it. And I noticed some worked. And I just went further into them. They're the same kind of startup A-B testing. I was A-B testing in my head. Really, I kid you not, you know?
Yeah.
Until I figured out some things that made me feel better. And then, boy, but within 30 days, I was better. My health was better. Everything was better. And all I was doing was just working on my inside, which kind of really opened up a huge paradigm shift for me. It's like, rather than trying to fix my outside, just fix my inside. And that shifts your whole outside. So that's the story behind that. And so like when I was done, when I was better, I shared it with, you know, what I was doing, the practice. And then I read up on a lot of neuroscience and so forth and other things. And I shared with them the theories behind it after the fact, after I'd actually just done it, was when I went and looked and why would this kind of stuff work? And it really helped them. And so like they basically, you know, dragged me kicking and screaming to write this book.
And you've done some cool things, man. Like you, like, you know, you were in the US Army. You meditated with Tibetan monks in the Dalai Lama's monastery. Yeah. You've done some cool things. And it's interesting that, like, it is interesting that it's got to that point.
Yeah, it kind of goes to show you the human self, man. We're all fighting our own internal battles. You know, that like no one's got, I don't think anyone's got their, quote unquote, their shit together 100% of the time. You know, we're human beings stuck in human minds, walking around in a human world. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate, but all those things I've done, but, you know, they were all like the best things I've done. I think of when I've taken risks, like joined the U.S. Army. You know, like was a risk. I dropped out of I left college to go do it. Even all the backpacking and the Tibetan monks and the Himalayas and all that. Those are what, you know, you're Australian, so you guys do that every, you know, every Australian does that. You know,
not American. Know about that. That's a huge stereotype, mate.
It's a huge one, but I'll tell you, when I've traveled, I've met plenty of you guys, you know, like, and girls out there versus Americans. There's less of that there. And those are great experiences, but I think the best experiences I've really had have been the internal ones, the ones that I got into. You know, those are the ones that really change your life. I really do believe any measure of success I'm having now are an exact result of that, of working on the inside.
Interesting. Something that you said that has captured me personally, and I was just like, wow, this guy is amazing. He's a really interesting guy. It was, you said that the best memories are made when you take that leap of faith and not know if the net's going to catch you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, we go through life every day just stuck in our routines. I mean, I'm very guilty of it. And what are the moments that we remember, right? When we did step up or we did do something different, when we took the risk, whether it was when I took the risk to move to Silicon Valley. It was a big risk. I left, you know, I was in upstate New York. And actually a friend of mine, I was talking to him at the gym. I was telling him I was thinking about doing it. And I was kind of on the fence. And he looked at me and said, Kamal, leap and the net will appear. And I don't know what it was about that, but that just stuck with me. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And that's actually what I've learned, to do these things. And I moved out here, and I didn't get a job for 2 months. And just when I was about to give up, when I went healthy on it, just worked out. Then they were all chasing me. But I wouldn't have experienced that if I hadn't taken the leap of selling everything, giving up my life there, and just buying a one-way ticket out of California and doing it, right? Mm. And look, that changed my life. Same thing with the book. I took a huge risk with writing the Love Yourself book. I really thought I was going to be just sent out of here tarred and feather on a donkey, you know, like people would just make fun of me and so forth. But I had to give, right? Huge risk, huge jump. That jump changed my life, right? I've spoken on stage a few times, and that terrifies the bejesus out of me. I mean, you should see.
Oh,
like,
really?
Oh, my goodness. Like, I've only spoken on stage a couple of times, but I remember the first time I did, and I think that the Love and Entrepreneurship video on YouTube that does well, I went to the bathroom 5 times before I went on stage. I was terrified. I was like absolutely terrified. But look, going up on stage and doing that really allows me to give and just be myself, and which is why I went and did it. And it was great. The experiences from that and the results from that have been amazing. So I think that's when the great things in life happen. You know, like it's almost like we should make a habit of jumping off cliffs. Because in the end, you know, like even if we hit the ground, you know, we get up and we dust our bruises off and we walk forward, but now we have the knowledge of that I'm a person who can jump off cliffs, which is a great thing to know by yourself.
So we have to work towards wrapping things up, man. I'd just like to kind of have some things that listeners can take away as entrepreneurs. Listeners and readers are people that are interested in entrepreneurship or at the early stages of building their business and company. What are two action items that you would like to give that people can take away from your skills and experience?
Okay. I'd say one would be what I mentioned before, is surround yourself with entrepreneurs better than you. Mm. Right? You want to be a good entrepreneur, surround you, whatever measure of success you want to have and however you want to define it, surround yourself with people who have that better. You will actually become that. That's just the nature of how things work. And I think the second is, if you can, make sure that whatever you're doing is some measure of an expression of you, of who you are. Because, you know, entrepreneurship is a great journey. It's a wonderful journey. You know, it's who you become in the process versus the bank account or the other things, because those go up and down and, you know, those are hard to predict. But who you become in the process is, because, like, for example, I know friends who, you know, every great, really great entrepreneur I know, if they lost all their money today, I bet you within a year they would have like 10x more than what they had. What makes, because it's who you become. Once you do something and you learn, you realize you get that confidence in yourself that I am able to do this.
Yeah, you right? can That's ship.
What, yeah, you can ship. Like, so I'll ship another product. I will do this. I've done it before. I will figure it out. That's an amazing mindset to have, that I will figure it out. In fact, I think that's one of my best attributes for myself, is like, whatever I get thrown in, I will figure it out. And, you know, any one of us can, just having that mindset that I will figure it out and just diving into it, because you don't know what's going to be down the rabbit hole until you're actually in it. But, you know, the one thing that really, now I think I might be diverging, but if whatever you do, if you can have it as being an expression of you, it's going to drive you forward in a way that nothing else can. Like, the books were an expression of me, for example, right? Mm. And like, the company was in the beginning, the last company, but when it stopped being, I should have walked away. Rather, I kept on going because of the prize at the end of the tunnel, right? And then it became about the money and so forth. And when you do that, you stop making poor decisions. You know, whereas if it's you, you're going to make better decisions.
When you wrote your books, you made yourself very vulnerable.
Yeah, I did. Honestly, I didn't think of that. All I knew was I had to strip my ego out of the books for me to really share what mattered. If I was going to give, I had to give the right way. Otherwise, not do it at all.
Awesome. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, Kamal.
Oh, thank you. Same here.
We've gone up and back and all around. It hasn't been a really structured interview, but it's been a whole ton of fun because we're just kind of having a conversation and just what kind of springs up where we're tackling it, you know?
Yeah, that's the best interviews. Thanks for having me. And if you come to the US, look me up.
Yeah, I will for sure. So yeah, look, I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I hope the people who listen to us reading this, you know, got something out of it.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.